Bava Kama, Perek Vav, Mishnah Dalet, 6-4, and now the Mishnah turns its attention to the final of those four Avos of Nezika that we saw in the very first Mishnah, that of Eish, or as the Mishnah called it, Hever. Now, the Pasuk for Eish, which means fire, is Kiseitze Eish, should a fire go out, Umatza Kotzim, and then it finds, you know, kindling to burn, little thorns, whatever it is, Benechel Gadish, O Hakama, O Hasadeh, and then it consumes the haystack or the standing grain still attached to the ground or the Sadeh, the field itself. Shalem Yishalem Hamavir Esa Be'era. The one who lit the fire shall make payment to the victim. So that's our source. Now, the essence of Eish as an Av Nezek is it has two elements. The first is that it by its nature is something that moves, not where you leave it. Dark or leilach lahazik, its way is to move and damage as it goes. And second of all, that it's not just a person or his property. It's a machlokas actually between Rav Yochanan and Rish Lakish, if we're focused on the person, and it's analogous to isho mashum chitzio, it's like a person's arrow, so to speak, he's inputting with something else, or if it's Eisho Mishum Mamono, it's that his fire is like his property. But whatever the case is, it's his thing, the fire, plus another element of power that mixed together with it. Typically, that would be the wind coming to combine with the dangerous thing. But the point, therefore, is, just for example, a person leaves, you know, a knife at the edge of his balcony, and the wind blows it off, and the knife falls down and lands on someone's head, so that'll be Eish, because it's this damaging, dangerous thing, the knife, which is prone to be moved by normal winds at the edge of the balcony, and which then the wind came and caused it to move, causing damage. Okay, so our Mishnah begins, it's a long Mishnah. First it says, Hasholech esa be'era biyad cheresh shot v'katan. If one sends the fire in the hands of a cheresh shota v'katan, these are the usual three who lack da'as, cheresh deaf mute, shota mentally incompetent, katan the minor, the child, not bar bat mitzvah. So he gave this thing called the child to transfer from point A to point B. And then, lo and behold, something catches on fire, and before it gets where it has to go, something burns down. So then, pater b'dinei adam, the person who sent this with the child, or the cheresh or the shota, he is exempt bidine adam, meaning down here on planet Earth, the earthly courts won't be able to extract money out of him. But chay bidine shemaim, up in heaven they will, which means that really, by rights, he owes the money. It's not just that he can opt to not pay. Essentially, he's like stealing the money from the victim if he doesn't pay it. But the courts won't force him to pay it, just if he doesn't pay, it'll be extracted from him by some kind of onish later on from heaven, which he could avert by paying the money him here now as he ought to. Now, the Gemara explains that the case here is not that a fellow gave like an open flame, you know, on a stick to a child and says, here, do me a favor and move this, you know, take this across the street, because fires are dangerous, and a person has an obligation to guard his fire from causing damage. And that being the case, giving it to the hands of a child or a cheresh or a shota is certainly not considered to be guarding one's property properly, and therefore the person who handed over the flame, the open flame, would be liable. The case of our Mishnah is that he had like a glowing red coal, you know, if let's say from the barbecue, and he's asking this child or the mentally incompetent person or the deaf mute to transfer it from point A to point B. Now, normally what happens is coals kind of go out. They don't just, you know, start fires unless someone, you know, fans the flame or adds oxygen and so on. So what happens here is he gave it to the child. It should have gone out under normal circumstances, but the child or the shelter, whatever it is, ended up playing with the fires. Children do, they're pyromaniacs, everyone knows, and it made a fire. So since the child caused the fire to emerge, despite notwithstanding the fact that normally if the child wouldn't have gotten involved, the smoldering coal would have just gone out. So that's why the person is chayv only with dinei shemaim. Because what he gave should have gone out, okay? But he's partially jointly responsible, if you will, but not more than that. Now, that all assumes we're talking about someone who is mentally incompetent. But shalach biad pikeach, if this smoldering coal was handed over to a person who had his mental faculties, and then that person ended up causing a fire. So then hapikeach chayav, the person who should have known better, he is responsible, and the person who sent him is totally not responsible, not even bidenei shemaim under normal circumstances. This is true if the pikeach is a regular person, if he's any kind of shomer, whatever it is, doesn't make a difference. More than that, even if the mishaleach, it's Reuven had the fire, or the burning coal, he gave it to Shimon and said, Shimon, do me a favor and move this to, my fire pit, across the estate or something. So then that base case, we're saying that Shimon is obligated if a fire breaks out because Shimon should be more careful. He's a pikeach, he's a bardas. But more than that, if Reuven would tell Shimon, Shimon, take this fire and burn down Levi's house, and then Shimon does that. So we're saying Shimon is responsible and not Reuven. Even if Reuven said to Shimon, burn down Levi's house, or else I'm going to punch you in the nose, or else I'm going to, or I'll pay you $100 if you do it, it doesn't matter. If Reuven induces Shimon to do it, it doesn't matter. Since Shimon is a bar das, he's a pikeach, he's a baal bechira, he's responsible for his actions. And if Shimon does it, Shimon is fully responsible and Reuven not. The reason why is because of a basic principle of ein shaliach ledavar aveira. If a person is acting, he can't be acting in the capacity of a shaliach, an extension of someone else, to do an aveira, to do something that is forbidden by the Torah. And therefore, he bears full responsibility. We're not talking about a case where, there was an onus, Reuven put a gun to Shimon's head or something. So that being the case, even if there was some inducement, like a threat of, physical pain or money, that doesn't matter. You cannot say you're acting on someone else's behalf. You bear full responsibility. And that is the Chiddush here. And the rationale for that is because we have this principle of what the Gemara describes as Divrei HaRav v'Divrei HaTalmid Mishomen. If you have instructions that are conflicting, one from the master, one from the student, to whom should you listen? Which is really metaphorical for Reuven said to Shimon, I'll give you $50 if you burn down my neighbor Levi's house. But God said, you can't do that. So who is Shimon supposed to listen to? Reuven, who's the Talmud, so to speak, God's disciple, or the Rav, the master, God himself? The answer, of course, is that Shimon is to listen to the Rav, meaning Hashem, and not to the Talmud, meaning Reuven. And therefore, if Reuven, excuse me, if Shimon obeys Shimon's orders and causes damages, Reuven bears, excuse me, Shimon bears full responsibility because he is a baal bechira, and Shimon pays nothing. There is a PS to that, which is if it turns out that Shimon can't pay for it, he hasn't got the money, then Reuven and the Bedini Shemaim should pay for it since he calls it. Now, we don't say that when it comes to the Chereshot of a Katan, because we don't have this principle of Divrei HaRav v'Divrei HaTalmid Mishomen, because we can't say that the person who is exempt from doing mitzvahs, lacking das, is obligated really to keep mitzvahs and listen to Hashem, so therefore they're not held responsible, and that's why we're passing responsibility directly back, at least b'dinei shemayim, to the mishaleach, to Reuven, who sent them along. Okay, that's part one of the Mishnah. Part two of the Mishnah. What happens if you have two people are involved in setting up this fire, but the fire only spread because of one of them? So the Mishnah will say, then only the second person is responsible. So for example, echad hevi esaor, the first guy puts down a little fire in a fire pit. Okay, and this would just go out by itself. That's Reuven's contribution. But then Shimon comes, ve'echad hevi esaetim, and Shimon adds fuel to the fire. And now it spreads, and now it causes damage. Well, the only person who we're ascribing responsibility to is the second guy, Shimon, because Reuven alone would have done nothing. His actions would have led to nothing. So Shimon remains fully responsible. Similarly, Hamevi Yasa'etzim, excuse me, there the case is Hamevi Yasa'etzim Chayev, the second guy, Shimon, who brought the wood and put fuel in the fire, he's obligated. Similarly, Echad Hevi Yasa'etzim, Echad Hevi Yasa'or, if the first guy makes a big pile of wood, that alone is dangerous, of course. But then the second guy comes and he lights that wood on fire, and then it spreads and causes damage. So then Hamevi Yasa'or Chayev, the second guy and him alone is Chayev. He's responsible for the damages because he alone is responsible for what went wrong. Without him, nothing would have happened. More than that, if you had like a fire that was going out as it should, Reuven and Shimon had a campfire, but now the flames are out, it's just smoldering, coals. Uva Acher, a third guy comes, Valiba, and he fans the coals back into a flame again, then Hamilabet Chayev, the guy who fanned the flames, he's the one who's responsible, because again, if it wouldn't have been for him fanning the flames, the fire would have not spread, it would have gone out, and nothing more would have happened. So therefore, just the third guy bears full responsibility. Libs Haruach, however, if let's say even the, you know, after the campfire has gone out, they're still smoldering coals, they don't pour water on the fire, but you know what? There's no reason to think this fire should spread, and it won't spread, except that some ruach, a wind, which is a ruach she'ena matsuya, an extraordinary wind, the kind of wind you wouldn't expect to happen under normal circumstances, it came and it caused the fire to flare up again and spread. Then kulan patur, and then everyone from the campfire is exempt, because they acted responsibly, leaving the pit, in the fire pit, the fire smoldering coals in a way that would not reasonably be expected to go and spread. You see here that once again, we had these two kind of standards of Shmira. We had Shmira Ma'ula and Shmira Pechusa, like a higher level or a lower level of guarding. We said when it came to Keren, the Torah expects a higher level, Shmira Ma'ula, and we had a machlokas there about the Mu'ud, if that's also Mira Pechusa. That was so that, but when, as opposed to Shein and Regel, we said you just need to have a Shmira Pechusa, a lesser, just a basic guarding. So we said, when it came to animals, livestock, Shmir Pechusa was things like locking the gate properly or tying the animal with like a leather leash, where Shmir Ma'ula, the like ultimate, you know, protection was stuff like, you know, having the kind of gate that wouldn't blow down even like in a hurricane, or, you know, using like a metal chain to strap the animal to the wall or something, which couldn't break. In any case, so you see here again, the Torah is requiring Shmir Pechusa, just a basic level of guardianship, of responsibility for not being liable for fires going out. And it's learned out really the same kind of way as the others. We're basically saying it has to be the person did the equivalent of, you know, doing it with his own hands. That's irresponsible, right? So because the pasuk says, Yishalem hamavir esa be'ira, the one who lit the fire has to pay for the fire. The point is you have to have acted in a way that's like tantamount to having lit the fire. But if you left it to go out in a reasonable way, that's called Shmir Pechusa, a lesser guardianship, but that's sufficient to not be responsible anymore, liable anymore. Okay, now, next case. The words, it's like a new paragraph. The Mishnah continues on and it says, Hashalech HaSebeira. Now these words, Hashalech HaSebeira, are identical to the first three words of our Mishnah. But, a little bit confounding, the first three words of our Mishnah, when it says Hashalech HaSebeira, it's talking about Shlichus, sending a human being with fire in hand to go transfer the fire. Whereas here, although it's the same exact words, the Mishnah is referring to a case where simply a person lit a fire in his own private property, but the fire spread. Okay, and let me make this one clear to you. If you, the base case, the Mishnah is you're lighting on your own property. If you would light a fire in your friend's property, setting his house on fire or something, then all bets are off. You're fully liable as an adam hamazik, a person causing damage. The case of our Mishnah here are where a person lit the fire beheter. He did in his own private property as he could and is allowed to set up a fire. But the problem is the fire spreads. So the question just becomes, did he act irresponsibly? Because if he did act irresponsibly, we'll hold him liable for the damage of the fire. So here the Mishnah says, Hashalech HaSebeira, one lights a fire in his own property, but the fire ends up spreading by means of the wind. V'achla Eitzim, o Avanim, o Afar, and then it goes and causes damage in his neighbor's property, consuming wood, or stones, or dirt. Then Chayev, then the person who set the fire back in his house is obligated, if he let it spread and he was acting irresponsibly, Shneamar, as the pasuk says, Kitete Eish, if one lets a fire go out, Umatza Kotzim Benech al Gadish or Akama or Sadeh, and then it goes, spreads and it consumes the haystack or the standing grain or the field, Shalem Yishalem Hamavir Esabera, the one who lit the fire has to pay. So the drasha here is, the chiddush is, we're talking about the Sadeh, the field itself. Because although the pasuk talks about Ne'echal, which means consumed, and achila, like in the abstract and throughout Kol Torah Kula, it's talking about like, you know, using something up as it's consumed and used up, whether it's eating it down your throat or like burning the fire, etc. But the fire here is causing damage, like it's blackening the ground or the walls. And that's not really consumption, because the walls of the ground still remain there. They're just ruined from the heat of the fire. So we're saying that the person who lit the fire is liable for that kind of damage as well. It doesn't have to actually be consumed. And that's why the Pasuk talked about Hasadeh, the field itself. And our Mishnah here is saying the same thing. If it's damages the Avanim or the Afar, like the stones itself become black, who wants to have a black wall, you have to clean them, and that costs money, or the afar, the dirt itself. How does dirt get damaged by fire? So let's say, for example, a person recently tilled his field. Now it's ready to be planted. But if a fire goes through there, it will like harden like a crust on the surface of the earth, and now he has to re-till the field so he can plant. Until he does that, he's not appropriate to plant the seeds anymore. That's damage which has to be paid for by the person who lit the fire back in his field and let it spread. Okay, now, the Mishnah is going to try to set out certain kind of like safe havens where we'll say, safe harbors, I should say, where we'll say, listen, if this was between your fire and your neighbor's property, and the fire got there anyways, you are going to have this sort of safe harbor and say you're innocent because you weren't irresponsible. So the Mishnah says, these are the kind of things you shouldn't expect the fire to be able to traverse, and therefore if it does cross over them, you'll be considered to be having not acted irresponsibly and be exempt. They are Avra gader shu gavoa arba amos. If the fire passes over a wall, the word gader, a gader in modern Hebrew is a fence, like a wooden fence. But throughout the Mishnah, the word gader, which can be translated as fence just fine, is really a stone wall. Okay, it functions like a fence, but they didn't make it out of wood; they made it out of stone. So the point is, it traverses this stone wall, the gader, shu gavoa arba amos, which is 4 amos high. The Gemara speaks out; we're talking 4 amos, which they call it like 6-7 feet, whatever it is. 2 meters, whatever it is, higher than the level of the wood that is, on fire. So it's more than 4 amos off the ground. So it shouldn't, and we're assuming on the other side you haven't got high thorns or something which are easy to catch on fire. So they're also recessed at least 4 amos from the top of the wall. So at that point, we'll say, listen, there's no reason why a fire in normal circumstances should be able to cross over the wall, and therefore if it does, you'll be exempt. Same goes if it's Oderech HaRabim, if the fire crosses over a street, which is a wide street. This is a 16 Amma wide street. The basis of this comes from the Rosh HaRab back in the Mishkan's time and the Agalot that are traveling. So 16 Ammas, call that 8 meters, 25 feet, something like that. That should be a good firebreaker, and there's no reason why fire should jump over the street. So if it does, you'd be considered to be an onus, to be under control, and you'd be putter. Oh, Nahar, or a river. Similarly, if there's a river that passes between your property and your neighbor's property, the river here, says the Gemara, has two features. It's got water in it, and it's 8 amos across. 8 amos, so that means 4 meters, I don't know what, 12, 13 feet, whatever it is. 16 feet, I don't know. So the point is that those are the features which it should be able to cross. The Rambam learns it needs to have both of those elements, meaning it has to have both water in it and a width of 8 amos. Other Rishonim learn that either one or the other is sufficient to act as a boundary over which one should not expect the fire to cross. Now, even without one of these, things around the perimeter of one's property to protect his neighbor, still, fires don't need to be expected to go forever and ever and ever under normal circumstances. So therefore, how much space do you need to give between your fire and your property and your neighbor's property? So we're going to have actually 4 different shiurim about how far you can expect it to go. The first, it says, Hamadik Basoch Shalo. A person lights a fire in his own backyard as he's allowed to do. So Ad Kama Tavor Hadaleka. How much should he expect the fire to spread and cause damage? Rabbi Lazar Ben Azariah Omer Roen Oso Ki'ilu Hu Be'emtza Base Kor. You got to imagine that you're putting your fire in the middle of a base kor. Base kor is like the largest of the areas that Chazal had to work with. Base kor is the size of 30 base sa, which works out to being one base saw is 2,500, so it's then becomes 75,000 square amos, which basically, if you run the numbers, comes out to being 274 amos on a side, or meaning if you're in the middle of that, it's basically in the middle of an area that has 137 amos in all directions to the edge. So basically what that's a way of saying is you have to keep it 137 amos away from your neighbor's property. In the loosest term, you can think of a base saw, a base core as something very loosely the size of a football field or a soccer field. It's actually probably a little bit smaller than that. But anyways, that's to give you an idea. We're talking that kind of size. Okay, so the point is you have to keep that kind of distance. So that's the first shita. That's kind of the biggest candy measurement they had on hand. The second shear was Rabbi Eliezer, who says, Omer Sheshasra Amos Kaderach Rishos Aram. He says, just as you have 16 Amos to distance from the Rishos Aram, 16 Amos is all you need to leave. 16 Amos, not that much space. Again, whatever that is, something like around, 8 meters, 25 feet, something like that. Rabbi Kiva Omer Chamishim Amos. He says, no, give it 50 Amos, 50 Amos. That's as far as the fire should be expected to spread. as the third shita, but the fourth is Rabbi Shimon. And Rabbi Shimon Omer, Shalom Yishalom Hamavir Esa Be'era. The pasuk says, you lit the fire, you got to pay for it. Hakol Lafia Deleika, which is coming to tell you those extra words, Esa Be'era, the fire, is coming to tell you every fire is different. It depends on, you know, what kind of ground cover it is, how big the fire is, how wide the fire is, how much the wind is blowing, how hot is outside, how dry the weather conditions are, etc. So you can't just have one a safe harbor at all. In fact, according to the Rambam, the previous safe harbors about the wall and the Derech HaRabim and the river also don't necessarily apply. You have to be responsible with your fire, and if it could be reasonably expected that your fire is going to spread and be able, given the conditions, to be able to spread, you know, 100 miles because it's really bad out there, and or over fences or over rivers, who knows what, so then if that could be expected, you're responsible. And there is no such thing as a blanket, like sort of safe harbor we can give you ahead of time to tell you how far the fire can be expected to spread. And the halacha actually follows Rabbi Shimon's opinion. That's a Shulchan Aruch, Mount Rambam rule. So therefore, you really, when you walk away, basically, although the Torah does require only a Shmira Pechusa, basic guardianship for a fire, you have to be responsible with your fire. And if you would do something which any reasonable person would say, listen, that seems like it could get out of hand and cause trouble, if it does, then the person with the fire would be fully responsible.